Welcome to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nate Sanderson.
In this episode, we discuss practical ideas to help you develop as a coach and build your team's culture. Now, we want to get you out of here in 30 minutes or less, so let's get started.
You're listening to episode 76, Developing a Player-Led Culture Using the Rule of Three. This is part three of our conversation with Mark Bennett. If you haven't already, be sure to check out episode 73 and 75 as well.
JP, this week's conversation, we're going to talk about something that I think is a dream for every coach in every sport at every level. If we were to ask you what you really wanted from your players, most would say, I want players who are going to show up every day and be responsible for themselves. That they're going to take responsibility for their own mental and emotional state, their own work ethic, their own drive, their own motivation, so that I don't have to coach those things and I can coach the sport that I love. And I think if you took that another step and said, all right, coach, I'm going to give you one more wish, it would be that when my players don't show up in that prime state on their own, that their teammates take responsibility for them and help them to be able to get to that level. So again, I don't have to be the one that's always calling people out or holding people accountable to our standards. Now, in my experience, I've found that the players that I've coached that are 14 to 18 years old, they don't know how to do either one of these things. And what's great about our conversation today is Mark's going to give us a structure and a way to communicate with our players to train them not only to take responsibility for their own mental emotional state when they show up every day, but how to intervene when their teammates are not at that level either. This is going to be a great conversation. We're glad to have you. Let's get started.
So we've talked about this rule of three. Let's just jump into it now and have you kind of explain it. From my understanding, right, what we've built so far is we've kind of outlined the standards for behavior, the unacceptable, the acceptable things, and potentially the exceptional behaviors. And you could do that as a team. And most coaches are like, great, maybe I've even done that before, but then now what? Like when things start to drop, then you know, the standard starts to drop, then how do I interact? How do I empower the players to start to take control themselves, you know, to hold themselves accountable, to hold each other accountable so that you aren't just the accountability police as the coach? And my understanding of the rule of three is that it is a strategy that you've developed and you help teach your the coaches that you work with upon which they can empower the players to hold each other and themselves accountable.
Yeah, it's a fairly recent in the 28 years. One of the challenges is to make things simple for coaches and give them tangible tools. So Rule of Three is a tangible tool that brings a lot of the principles into one very simple model that's overtly shared with the players. So important that you overtly share the Rule of Three with the players. They need to know what it is, what it looks like. And the simple version is, and there's loads of elements that is connecting, but the simple version is one is self. So this is the same for coach and athletes, by the way. One is self, and one self is behavior first, then the learning, the technical and tactical. So the behavior first is me being aware of my state. Am I committing? Am I living excellence? Am I managing my state? No, I'm going to make sure I do. I'm going to live in a present. I'm going to pursue excellence. That's me at one. Now, that's the same for the coach, remember. The coach needs to do this as well. Am I in excellence now, and I'm managing my state? It's one. It's the same. Now, two is I'm now a peer. So now I'm seeing it could be anyone, and we'll explain how this can link in permissions. I'm now looking at another player, and the other player now is unacceptable at one, which has been pre-agreed, so we know what it looks like. I now reach out to have a positive impact on that player. So this is very different than effective communication, because the reason I'm not great at saying effective communication is because effective communication, when you ask a lot of coaches, it's a list. Well, effective communication is only effective if it has the desired impact. So you can be clear, loud, blah, blah, blah. But if it does not have the desired impact, it is ineffective. So what we're saying is that two is we reach out to have a positive impact. Now, the rule is in three is if someone's reaching out to you, you must accept, because they're reaching out because they want to help you get better. So you can't push it away. Now, this is really critical, because part of developing the human being is dealing with your ability to accept and embrace feedback from peers that could be junior to you, could be senior, could be equal to. So it's the ego thing we need to break down. Children are very poor at this through their education system and traditional coaching, and elite pros are very poor at it. So in the England rugby team I work with weren't great at this, the accept. Now we do an overt accept. So you either have to do a hand touch, or if they're, you know, if they're too far away, you do a hand up in recognition. Then you have to show that you're now changing. So that's the two in behaviors. Three is coach is scanning for this. So he's scanning for one, someone's unacceptable itself. Have they put it right? Yes, great. Someone's unacceptable itself. They haven't put it right. I'm now looking at two. Is one of their peers going to step in? Yes, they have. Great. And they've accepted they've done something great. Three is now, no, I either haven't seen two, or two stepped in. One is ignoring it. Two steps in again. One is still ignoring it. Three is coach now steps in. So we share with everybody. The aim is never to get to three, never to get coach to step in. So that's their aim. That's the success criteria for players. Now, here's where it becomes really interesting is we can use the same with learning and understanding in tactical as well. So one can be, I'm making effective tactics because my behaviors are first, so I'm in a good state. I'm making effective choice, I'm committing. Now, I'm not sure of the choice, so now I can reach out to one of my peers at two to go, I'm not sure about this, can you help me? At the same time, someone could be in great state and starting to make wrong choices consistently. Two can reach out to them and go, hey, Danny, you know you're coming in there. What we need to do is come out here. We need to pass in width here. Okay, hand touch, great, accept. So with the technical and tactical and the behavior, one can still reach out to two to get back up. So even in behavior, if someone's now losing it a little bit and they can't control it, through training, they've worked out, Stevie's good for me. Stevie, I'm losing it a bit here, Stevie. So Stevie knows what to say to me. It can be the tap on the face of the hand or come on, you got this. So this is about this relationship at one and two, understanding you're never on your own. So you can reach out for assistance, but also you have to accept it because it appears that you can't be blinded, blinkered. You need to look out for the people around you. One, is their behavior acceptable? And secondly, are they now making poor choices? So I need to step in and support them if they're not. So then coach is stepping back and looking at both, and coach can step in. Now, here's the other thing. Technically and tactically, if the whole team is struggling tactically or conflicting, so that coach is putting a problem-solving session, they're trying to problem-solve it, they can't, they've explored everything, they can now reach out to coach, go, coach, we need you now. We're struggling with this, or we got conflict. We both disagree here. What have you got, coach? And now coach can step in. So they can call for coach to step in, or coach can go, hey, I'm seeing it. No, continually making the wrong choice, not adapting. Right, I need to stop and step in. So it's a real good mechanical, it gives freedom and it's very organic, but it's given a coach an awareness of when do I step in and when not, which is a real common question I get with coaches when they follow this athlete-centered approach. Mark, do you just want me to do nothing? No, I don't. Well, when do I step in? And it's just giving people this structure. That's the stripped out simple version. Does it make sense?
Yeah, and one of the things I think is so powerful about that and is so often overlooked in the coaching mode is the permissions, you know, of yes. Walking kids and players and coaches through, you're giving your teammates permission to intervene, whether it's in your state or it's in your performance behavior. There's a great book called The Messiah Method and that talks about the soccer program, and they have a rule in terms of their culture that whenever they're interacting, they always begin with this phrase of no offense intended, no offense taken, you know, and so that they can get to the root of the information of the thing that is designed to be able to change their state or to improve their performance. And I think so often we get frustrated as coaches when, you know, either we have a leader that's a really strong leader as a player and yet their leadership is not received. Well, it's not received because they've never been coached in how to accept it, you know, whether it's guidance or whether it's encouragement or whatever. And I think when you emphasize laying the groundwork for that relational approach and you teach players not only what it looks like, but even the obstacles to accepting it, I think it opens up this whole new potential for, again, for your team to grow and for your performance to be unleashed.
And there's some key things linked into that is the best time to develop it is in a learning environment. So when you're teaching them something new, or some know it and some don't, then you can use this because it's really great. Because then you can say to the players, I know these players have got this. They can use a rule of two to help develop the other players that don't. The coach can step back, go, don't need to be saying this. Off you go, guys. So in those moments, it's easier for peers to accept feedback because it's learning. So it's a lot easier. But then actually you embrace, because you have to have the hand up and hand touch, feedback, great, yes. Coach has to do it if he's challenging a player. The closure is the hand touch. Yeah, we've got this. It's done. There's nothing personal. We're reaching out to help you right now. Thanks, coach. Acceptance. So when we do it in the learning environment, it becomes, okay, this is cool. So then when we start to go for the high performance, the more pressure loading, it's like live match type training, really uncomfortable. Now they're more likely to accept the feedback because they got used to it in the learning environment. Here's the other key thing. If coach steps in, and this is what can be on behavior, particularly on tactical, and he comes in and he's saying, okay, guys, why have I stopped the session? So he puts it straight back at them. Why have I stopped? And see if they can recognize the reason why. Okay, so guys, so you've recognized it. Can you deal with it now? Do you need me to say any more? No. Okay, back out again. So the coach doesn't have to talk a lot now. They already know the parameters of what's acceptable or unacceptable because it's been pre-agreed. The other interesting bit is we come in and we say, okay, guys, why have I stopped? And if it's a tactical choice thing or they're continually making the same issues or someone wasn't aware of something, we're asking, okay, so review what just happened. They give you the review and it may be something like, okay, so you're giving me the right answers now. You're very good at afterwards giving me the answer when we've stopped. But when did you recognize you were making the wrong choice? Oh, coach, straight away within 30 seconds. Okay, so my question to you is, why didn't you do something about it then? Because I'm giving you permission, if you see something not working, to change it. I don't care if it doesn't come off. Your recognition of you making an adjustment and committing to the adjustment is where the learning is going to take place right now. So I don't want you to come in and give me the answer. I want you to show me the answer. And you push them back out again. So all this thing is connected to them developing them for match play, where actually we want them to make decisions and adapt based on what the opposition are doing and what's coming, because that's great gameplay. But we're using training as a way to develop that software skills within the individuals.
So one of the things you do in your workshops, I know, is you demonstrate this. Like you come in and you, or say you're coming in and working with the team, is you demonstrate. Can you, as best you can here, give us an example or kind of demonstrate, if Nate was to implement this with his team today, with his girls' team, how would he best, most simply, communicate this tool that the team is going to be using? And just kind of share with us how that he could easily simplify the directions around this.
So when I do it on the masterclasses, I kind of use a worst case scenario. So I've not ever met these players, never met me, and I get them for an hour. So, you know, I go, look, if I can do it in an hour when they don't met me, then you can see the impact. So you always need it. If you're going to do it with your team, you really need to have a sit down chat so they get it. They see the value of what's the purpose of a coach. So they, you know, they make the context of, oh, it's not me giving you the answers all the time. It's you working out yourselves. Okay, so what do I need to do to help you become better than that? So they make the connection, and then you share the rule of three. I need you to know what success is for every session. I need you to let me know the clarity on what you feel is acceptable and unacceptable, so you can hold yourselves accountable. So you don't need me to give you guidance because you know the guidance already. So it's giving clarity at the beginning. Now, when I do it live, all I simply do is, just the purpose of making the connection with them very quick, is I always do a baseline. So I just let them play. Give them the ball, let them play. And I'm scanning. I've got the coach and I'm scanning. What are you seeing? So we're just baselining. And we're looking at, if we could pick one or two or three things, what would be the order? Number one, number two, number three, if to have the biggest impact. And that could be a tactical thing. It could be anything. So then when I bring them in, I say, okay, great. So what were you, if you're looking as a team, if this session was, we only pick one thing that we can work on that's going to have the biggest impact as a team right now for the next 40 minutes, and you can only work on one thing, what would it be? Based on how you played right there. And 9 times out of 10, they'll pick up the one thing straight away. If not, you can ask them, okay, what about this? What about that? And then we say, okay, so let's run this session just based on that one thing. So can you now show me what acceptable and unacceptable excellence would be? And then I just do a time phase. So I just share within the rule of three what it is. You know, the simple of one is yourself making sure you're being excellence, committing, making a choice, committing, making a choice, committing, just reviewing. Two is helping each other, being excellence. And then three is I have to step in. So the aim is don't let me step in. And I just ask them, how long can you hold minimal acceptable for? So we've agreed what it is. You say you can do it. We know what acceptable and unacceptable is now. We know what exceptional is. How long? So they might say 3 minutes. So, okay, we'll go for three. I'll put a stopwatch on it. Here's the thing. If I have to step in at three, that means you've failed and I'm going to reset the stopwatch back to zero and you go again. Now, I give them options now. So I say to them, do you want me to give you a 5 second countdown when I see it unacceptable, I see you not figuring it out, and shout out what it is in 5 seconds, and if you sort it out, we can keep going? Do you just want me to give you 5 seconds but not shout it out, so you've got a bit of a time, you know what's happening, you can figure it? Or do you not want 5 seconds, I just go reset and tell you what it is, or just shout reset and don't tell you what it is, which is the toughest one? And then I ask them, if I call a reset, do you need 10 seconds to talk amongst yourselves and then go, or do you want just reset and we go again? So generally they'll go, give us a 10 seconds, coach. And generally early on, they'll say, yeah, give us a 5 second countdown and shout out what it is, please. Now, interestingly, it's only going to be one or two things because that's whatever we've agreed anyway. But sometimes they want to see which team it is. You know, is it Reds or is it Blues you're calling? So it might be something as simple as that. And then I let them go. Now, what you'll see is straight away, the intensity will go through the roof, but they won't be using too effectively. So we'll have to reset. Now, often what they'll do, I'll be resetting at 30 seconds, 20 seconds. I'll let this go for a few, and if they're not improving, I'll pull them in and say, okay, so remind me, we agreed 3 minutes. How are we doing? Well, coach, we're not even getting 30 seconds. Okay, so what's preventing us? Because we say we can do it, what's preventing us? And they're going, well, Sarah's not going wide or whatever. Okay, so remind me what two is. So you remind them on the rule of three. Okay, so what could you do live within 5 seconds that could help problem solve that? Oh, we could shout out. So I want you to shout out, show me your hand up so I recognize. If I'm seeing that, I'll let the clock keep running. So now we're enforcing two, getting them to buy into two. Do you still want a 3 minutes or do you want to reduce it? And often they'll say, okay, let's go for 90 seconds. And then if we nail that, we can stretch again. Okay, do you need any time? 10 seconds? Give us 10 seconds, coach. We go again. So I'm keeping it honest. I'm keeping it based on what they said success was. I'm asking a question of what's preventing us. What do we need to adjust now? What do we need to do? What rule have we got to help? What could you do? Okay, show me. Bang, bang, bang. And you'll find within 15 minutes, you'll see the most intense, highest quality training you've ever seen, because we've made it easy for them to understand what success is and what they need to do and what they can do. And we're not letting them off the hook. We're talking about absolutely nothing else. We keep going back and connecting back to what they said, what's preventing it, what can they do, do we need to adjust, show me, and just linking it that way. So within every team I've done this with, and a great example, I did it with a soccer team in UK, and the morning when we set it up, the organizer said, Mark, the coach has been in Las Vegas, and he's not feeling that well, so we won't have the coach. And he hasn't told the players what they're doing. So the players just turned up, and they were teenagers, adolescents group. And the warm-up, they were just bimbling through it. It was really lazy. And I had 30, 40 coaches observing on the sideline going, this will be interesting. But within 40 minutes, then the coach turns up about 40 minutes an hour in with his civilian clothes on. And what he watched, he said, Mark, I've never seen them train that hard. I've never seen them communicating that well. This is like a different team. So that was somebody that had been working with him consistently and saw the difference within 40 minutes. And all I did was use the principles I've just shared with you there.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable stuff. Just a little technical question about it. You talked about raising your hand as a coach as a signal to them. Is that like the 5 second countdown that you would use, or?
Yes. So there's two with the raising the hand. So if you're using the 5 second countdown, you're just raising your hand and shouting 5, 4, 3. So they know if that's what you. But you've got to pre-agree this. So if they haven't done it, they can't have it. But and then the other hand up is peers to peer. So at two. If I'm shouting to Jimmy, because Jimmy is unacceptable at one, I'm shouting to him, whether it's technical or behavior, Jimmy has to put his hand up to show he's heard it and accepted it. So me as a coach on the sideline can see Stevie shouted at Jimmy, Jimmy's accepted. I know Jimmy's heard it. Now I'm looking for Jimmy's actions. Is he adjusting? And Stevie knows Jimmy's accepted. So if Jimmy's now closer, they can hand touch or fist punch. But there has to be an acceptance so we know whoever's shouted out to someone, the peer has recognized it. So we're not getting any negative no response.
Yeah, love that. And one of the things I've done like with basketball teams is allowing the players to call that 20-second timeout, like you said, like that 10 seconds or whatever, where they huddle together and they find the solution before we have to essentially call the full timeout. And then, like you said, the coach has to step in. Here's one question for you. Coaches like that, that adolescence coach for the soccer that you were discussing there. When you've left, all right, you've done this, you're experienced at this, right? So you've been doing this for a long time in the military, in the business world, and in the youth sports and sports in general. So you're really good at it, right? So this isn't something that a coach is going to implement tomorrow and they're going to be great at it like you. But have they been able to sustain some of these tactics and continue implementing this over a period of time? What type of feedback have you gotten, and what are the challenges when you leave for that our coaches are facing of continuing to implement the rule of three?
Any of the teams that have put in a support mechanism, they've been sustainable. So if you've watched my Twitter recently, I've posted some young kids doing their own rule of three, 6, 7, 8 year olds, little video clips on the Twitter on the PDS coach. Now that's a great example. They're a rugby and a soccer that I actually only see once a month. I don't see the players, I see the coaches. And all they're doing is, in between that, we've got a WhatsApp group that they share their reviews, they're peer reviewing the video clips. So we just did a day's training where we share with them the fundamentals of the peer support, the fundamentals of what to look for, the video review, and how do you peer review. I'm in their WhatsApp group, so I can make sure they're continuing it. I'm like three, if you like, in their WhatsApp group. If they can't figure out any questions, I'm in there for the last, but their aim is not to get me to say anything. That's kind of the aim in the WhatsApp groups. And they've been doing that for 4 months now, and they're pretty smooth now. What the videos you've seen are just normal training videos, because they're understanding, they're holding each other accountable for the fundamentals, and they've been patient for months embedding the simple elements of fundamentals. There's a few other teams I've worked with, and the WhatsApp groups and the Slack groups are still going. I haven't seen them for 2 years, but actually they're still using it. So it normally, for me, it normally takes 6 months of some sort of external support to ingrain and embed the behaviors. After that, so long as you make sure you keep the peer support going, then it's pretty sustainable. Now you can take that to another level. So Alan Keane, I've been working with for 7 years, that he's learning the advanced stuff. So there's a difference between the fundamentals of PDS, which will get you what we've discussed, and then the other elements, which will really fine-tune and deal with the real extreme scenarios and high performance loading. But the fundamentals will have an impact in the culture and the engagement of children immediately. But it normally takes about 6 months to embed it, i.e., the coach now can do it. And the coach won't change back then, because he'll have to deliberately not change back then, because he's so aware of what he's doing and he's seen the impact. For him now to decide to go and not do it is him deliberately attempting to sabotage his own session.
So Nate, every time I hear Mark talk about the rule of three, I think I take away something new. But I also it presents, challenges. And I think any coach, whether you've heard it the first time or you've heard it 3 times, is that while this is a very practical tool that we can implement, I think we sometimes struggle with how can I implement this more effectively within my context. And so I'd like to share real quick just a simple way that I did something very similar to what Mark talks about today, years ago in coaching, that I think would be kind of a staple for any program that I would run today. And I called it my team quick set. And we essentially would start every practice with 5 drills, 60 seconds each. And to start the season, we talked about the purpose, the why we were going to do these drills, that they were relevant to the skills that we needed to be developing over time. We kind of mapped out the why, but we also talked about what it should look like, right? What it would look like a great team, and what Mark talks about is excellence. What would excellence look like in this drill? And they mapped out 2 to 3 behaviors down to their communication, their energy, just some of these behaviors that would be critical for them being excellent or exceptional in the drill. And so once they had done that, I would start the quick set, or the captains or leaders on the team would start the quick set right away at the start of practice. And there, I was just sitting back and observing. And if after 60 seconds they were going through one of the drills, if they were not operating at that level that we had set out from and the standards for at the beginning, then I would just say, keep going. And that would be the signal to them that they were not, in my opinion, operating at the level they needed to be at and that they had agreed to be at as well. And so you would see an instant change, right? Even from like the second or third day of doing that, players started to call out to each other, to communicate to each other, hey, you're not talking over there, or come on, start sprinting to that spot. And you started to see that. But the coolest thing about it is, as the season went on, progressively, you started to see where I didn't even have to step in and tell them, keep going. 15 seconds into a drill, if they're not communicating, they're not hustling, certain guys would start to reach out to each other. And they'd start to call each other up on various aspects of the drill or whatever the behaviors were. And I remember even some moments where players, before we even start the drill, would be like, guys, remember, we got to be sprinting to the spots today on this. And this is something we did every day. And it put us such in a great frame of mind because two things happened. One thing was the players had to start practice with their behaviors like in check, right? They had to be operating a high level there. Before we could move into the tactical or technical development that we were going to be doing, these drills were more about getting the behaviors right, which Mark stresses. The second thing that's huge here is I created space to get them initially, very early in practice, to start to communicate and hold each other accountable in a positive way. And we were able to use that as a tool to train and empower the leaders throughout our entire season, just in that simple, simple way.
I love about that, JP, is that you're starting practice with what you say is most important in your program. That if you're going to be about culture first before your tactics and before, you know, your technical skills, like beginning every single day with an emphasis on we will be exceptional today, both individually and we will get there as a team, sets the tone for the rest of your practice and really reinforces this idea that this truly is the most important thing for us every single day. The other takeaway from this week's conversation that was particularly impactful for me, JP, is that I think it's really important that players have to give each other permission to intervene when their behaviors are not at an acceptable or an exceptional place. In other words, we expect our captains or we expect our seniors or we expect our more experienced players to, you know, to speak out in practice when things aren't going the way that they should, but that's not always well received. And certainly there are times where your captains or your seniors or your best players may not be at that acceptable or exceptional place themselves individually. And if they haven't given their teammates permission, and I mean deliberately so, to be able to intervene and to be able to say, hey, man, you got to pick it up today, then that's going to have a negative effect on your players' ability to lead one another. What this does, what Mark's process here does is first of all, it explains this is why it's so important for us to be at this state. It's so important for us to get there to maximize our potential and play at our highest level that we have to be willing not only to take responsibility for ourselves, but then also to allow our teammates to help us get there when we can't get there on our own. And for us last year, like we actually had to take a full session, a mental health day, and walk through this is why it's important and this is how it's done. This is how you approach your teammate. This is how you receive it when you're in that place and really formally acknowledge and give one another permission to intervene. And that formal permission process, like actually verbalizing that, really allowed our players the freedom to be able to help each other to grow in that way. And that was really healthy for our team to be able to do that. And I think the last piece of what Mark does here is that every time a player corrects another player or challenges another player, they always close it with a touch, right? Or some sort of positive feedback that communicates, hey, man, you're not working as hard as I know you can, but I'm with you and I want you to be with us and I know you can get there. And that building that into the process as well, I think just continues to allow players to push each other forward in a very healthy way.
For today's episode, if you want more from Mark Bennett, be sure to check out my other podcast, Culture Builders, where I'm giving you 3 to 5 minute episodes, and Mark shares some other great tools there on how to empower your players to step up and lead. Also, if you go to thriveonchallenge.com, subscribe to the weekly newsletter there, you can get some coaching notes. I know we've got a lot of notes on Mark Bennett's Rule of Three and some other tools that he's given us. And next week, Nate and I are going to be coming in and talking about some strategies and some ways that you can improve your awards banquet, because I know a lot of coaches are facing the traditional awards banquet, and we have some untraditional approaches that can make it a special and transformational experience for your players and even their parents. Thanks again for listening in, and have a good one.